Success Match Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network studios.
Not quite sure what to make out of this weekend. Okay, so only two NFL teams won their home game yesterday. And actually, even the Thursday night game. Only two home teams were able to come away with the win. Obviously, everybody that is in Phoenix that is a Cardinal fan, because there's lots of fans of other teams in Phoenix, but in the state, actually. You're all geeked up about the Cardinals game last night. And I felt like that it was obviously a contender performance. We have talked about whether they are pretenders or contenders. It actually started with Bruce Arians challenging them at halftime at Cleveland, a bad team, if they're pretenders or contenders. It does not matter to me because I've had some people that have said, well, this is not the best Seattle Seahawks team. I don't know that. And quite frankly, I don't care. Okay. I'm not going to minimize what they did last night in Seattle. The officiating was horrid, but the officiating across the NFL is horrid. I don't know whether it is a catch or I don't know if there's catches or not catches. I don't know anymore. And I think most of you know. And in fact, I don't even think the refs know sometimes what is a catch and what is not, or the coaches. So I try to put all that to the side for a 4 hour plus NFL game last night. And NFL games never go 4 hours, but that's what we had last night. When it's all said and done, that was a 15 round heavyweight. It was not Ronda Rousey in the first round getting a foot to the head. It was a 15-round. The Cardinals came out swinging and landed some blows early. The Cardinals had them down face first on the mat. The Seahawks pulled themselves up off the mat, and they punched right back, and they knocked the Cardinals and staggered the Cardinals and had them on the canvas. And then Carson Palmer willed this team to find a way in a hostile environment without one of their best offensive linemen, and found Jermaine Gresham, and was truly balls of steel drive. It's the only way to put it. Last night, that drive down the field from Carson Palmer to Jermaine Gresham as it finished up was as good a drive and as signature a drive as you're going to see out of any NFL team. You've just been whacked around by a Seahawks defense. They have their place going crazy, and Carson Palmer stepped up literally, not just figuratively. He stepped up in the pocket. Last night, Carson Palmer moved like I've never seen Carson move before. He had pocket awareness that we haven't seen. And the Bruce Arians play call to Andre Ellington shows you why, and it's not the first time that that's happened this year. Bruce has had a couple times where he's called plays that have been phenomenal. But the play call to Ellington and then the block downfield was as good as you're going to get. It's just as good as it's going to get if you're a fan of football. Forget about if you're a Cardinal fan or a Packer fan or a Bills fan or a stinking Cowboy fan or whatever your team is. If you're watching that play last night, you see Ellington go down the sidelines and tiptoe into the end zone. Of course, for me, what I saw last night in the Ellington play was something a little bit better than that. And that is the enthusiasm of one of his teammates. There's Drew Stanton saying, go, dude, go, dude, go, dude, go, dude. This is what you love sports. This is why I love doing what I do still. When I see a grown man act like this, and it's a teammate who has no shot of getting on the field unless Carson Palmer gets hurt, this is what we all want to see, right? We all love seeing that type of reaction because we don't see it that much. Like Cliff Avril comes in on a sack and nails Carson Palmer and the ball goes high in the air. So it's still live. And what does he do? He keeps running and pumping and thrusting towards the crowd while the play is still going on, rather than being aware that, dude, the play is still on. It's a live football, but you want to make it about you and how great of a hit that you just put on a quarterback, but you're not even aware that the play is still going. How's that working out for you?
The thing I loved about that with Stanton, Brad, is that just shows the Cardinals are just buying in.
Sure.
He's a backup quarterback, like you said. He's probably not going to play. And he is, you see that kind of enthusiasm in high school.
Yep.
And in college. You rarely see that in the NFL. And that's just, I mean, that's the big buzz today. I mean, story one: Cardinals beat Seahawks in Seattle. Story 1A, the Stanton dance or whatever they're calling it.
The happy dance.
The happy dance.
Yeah.
Of course.
So,
and Palmer kind of had to have happy feet because most of the night the Cardinals' offensive line was basically getting pushed right back into the pocket. But you know what? It wasn't perfect, but like you said, it's a heavyweight fight. And when push came to shove and the Cardinals absolutely had to make plays, they made plays. Credit well, where credit is due.
Here's the thing on this. So you and I are on the same page. I'm talking about the pocket presence of Carson Palmer, and I think none of us have said, boy, Carson Palmer's really fleet of foot. It's usually, man, they're just one hit away. They're one hit away, and their season's going to go down the toilet like it did last year. They got to keep Carson Palmer upright, and we've talked about that. I think everybody's talked about that. And what did he do last night in the face of adversity? Yeah, he got whacked, and yeah, he got hit, but he also found times and ways to make plays while he was still under duress. You know, once the potty went out, it was like Bobby Massey back on roller skates. You know, that's – and the other side of that is Seattle's really good. They have a really good pass rush. I'm not going to sit here and psychoanalyze if Richard Sherman is the same player because he has a big contract. I don't know that, and I don't care.
Speaking of Richard Sherman, I thought one of the most underrated players for the Cardinals last night was Jerron Brown.
No question.
He made a couple plays, especially the ball where Sherman broke on the route, and the ball was a 50-50 ball, and Jerron Brown basically took an interception away from Sherman. And then later in the game on third down, with Smokey out, who is Carson Palmer go to? The other Brown, Jerron Brown. Not a lot of people talking about him. Obviously, Honey Badger, another great game. But Jerron Brown had a couple big, big plays late in that game last night.
Well, that speaks to, and I'm not going to be one of these guys that sits here in, you know, on November 16th and say, boy, this is very similar to the team that went to the Super Bowl. Yeah, you can start seeing some of those things. I'm not going to disagree with you about that.
This team is way more talented, though. Way more talented than that team.
Well, I would agree with you, but look, it's like, how many of you out there know who Britton Golden is? So on the Andre Ellington touchdown, what very few people saw was Britton Golden down the field with a downfield block. Britton Golden went to West Texas A&M. You know, we hear all about Michael Floyd and Larry Fitzgerald and Jerron Brown and John Brown, but you have to have guys that go out and just do their job. And Britton Golden last night went out and made a block, made a play, a football play, a very fundamental play, a downfield block that sprung Andre Ellington the distance. If you go back and look, you'll see number 10, and you're like, who is Britton Golden?
That was one of the things that Arians pointed out right after the game. Yeah, the play call was great. Yeah, Ellington tiptoed down the sidelines, but without that Britton Golden block, he doesn't score.
Well, look, Eric, I want Bruce Arians. When I think of play callers, like Norv Turner was an awful head coach, in my opinion. But if you look at what's going on in Minnesota and the development of Teddy Bridgewater and who had the Vikings at 7-2 at the start of this season and who's their coordinator, it's Norv Turner, right? There are certain guys that are just meant to be play callers. And Bruce Arians, his play calling, you always have to be on guard, always with him. And that play call last night with Ellington, sure, he's going to turn around as a head coach would and should and credit the receiver. But you have to be on your toes. When Carson said after the Cleveland game, it was the best play calling he's ever been a part of. So I'm watching last night, and I'm seeing them try to get the run established, but there just came a point very early on where we're going to take some shots down the field because we don't think Seattle's defense can stay with us. There's more to just what is a final score of a game and my team won and your team lost and my team's great and your team blows, that we're in this day and age where that's all it turns into. It just turns into name calling. And it's just silly. So you can go on Twitter and say, you know, the Cowboys blow. Well, the Cowboys have lost a whole bunch of close games this year. They've been without Tony Romo. They're not going to make the playoffs in all likelihood. So I'm not going to sit here and make fun of the Cowboys because it's too easy this year. You know, they stink from a record standpoint, and they're not going to do anything, but they've been without their best player. When I see the Cardinals, it's a completely different story. You say that this is a better roster.
I think it is.
So we're not going to go back and forth today on this, but I think over the next 6-7 weeks, right? Like, I would take Anquan Boldin over Michael Floyd any day of the week. I would take Anquan Boldin over any of these receivers outside of Fitz any day of the week. Would I take Edgerrin James over Chris Johnson? Again, we're just sitting here after a nice win in Seattle. Very nice win. Very impressive win. They're not pretenders anymore. They are contenders now, in my opinion. Because when you have a three-game lead in your division, and you have seven to play, and yeah, the schedule, as you look at it now, who had Minnesota as being this good? But then who had Green Bay being a team that was just awful yesterday? Like, Detroit is terrible. They are just terrible. And there's Green Bay at home yesterday losing to a stink-out-loud Green Bay's losing at home to a stink-out-loud Detroit team who the Cardinals chewed up and spit out. So when they played Green Bay late in the year now, I think Peter brought this up. Well, that game, I think a month ago. Well, Brad, we don't know if the game against the Packers, if they're going to be resting their starters. Well, the way it's going now, they're going to have to be playing their best at the end of the season.
And if you would have told me Michael Floyd and Larry Fitzgerald would combine for 17 catches and almost 240 yards and two touchdowns, you would have liked the Cardinals' chances. And that actually happened last night. They had no answer for those guys who found seams down the field, and they were able to stretch the defense.
But here's the thing on this. Michael Floyd would have dropped a lot of those balls in the past, or he would not have run a precise route. To me, if I'm watching Michael Floyd, and fans wanted him out of here. There was Michael Floyd first-round bust being discussed in this community, not just by me, but by everyone on the media side, and even fans were like, this guy can't play. He was dropping balls. He was hurt. He wasn't dedicated to his craft, it didn't sound like. And now you see him, and it's your Jerron Brown comment. So that goes back to next man up. Michael Floyd goes down with a groin that's a little balky, and here comes Jerron Brown and makes a catch with Richard Sherman right there in his face. It very easily could have been an interception. I mean, very easily. They're using their tight ends in a way that they're becoming very disruptive. It's not just Jermaine Gresham. So, yeah, I can sit here and go back and forth all day long on this team. I mean, Troy Nicholas had two touchdowns at Cleveland 2 weeks ago. So, I mean, they're using their tight ends. Clark Judge is next. Longtime NFL insider, Talk of Fame host. We're going to talk to Clark not only about the Cardinals, but is Peyton Manning just flat done? And what's going on with Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay? And is he surprised by the Vikings and the Patriots lose Julian Edelman? All that around the NFL with Clark Judge from the Talk of Fame next. I'm Brad Sussman.
Like our Facebook fan page for unique Arizona sports content from the high schools to the pros. Facebook.com/sports360AZ.
Clark Judge joins us now, Talk of Fame Network, talkoffamenetwork.com. Actually, two of the three hosts from Talk of Fame Network, Clark included, and Rick Gosling are going to be in Vegas at the Luxor with Jerry Rice on December 5th, a Sunday in Las Vegas. So that's pretty cool. I'll have more information about that. I'll actually put something up on our website with a link to it. If you want to check the guys out with Jerry Rice, you want to go to Vegas, that's a cool deal. Okay, so let's jump on board here with, before we get to the Cardinals and what happened last night in Seattle, you have John Elway and you have Gary Kubiak, who are two very smart guys and a Hall of Famer, and they're looking at Peyton Manning, and they're saying to each other, what exactly do you think today?
We got to get this guy better, otherwise we can't win with him. But he's not going to get better, Brad. He's going to get older. I mean, he might get better in terms of his health. I mean, there's some reports that he's got a torn plantar fascia. But I've had torn plantar fascias. I've had two of them, and they are very painful. His brother had a torn plantar fascia or plantar fasciitis, and he played through it. They're very, very painful. Anyone who's had them knows about it. Runners get them all the time. It's very difficult to put any weight on your foot. You saw that game yesterday. It reminds me of the Peyton Manning we saw in the playoffs last year. The ball can't get deep. People know it. They play him close. They play the short and intermediate routes, and they take his receivers away from him. So I don't know what your options are other than go with him until and unless he demonstrates he can't win for you. And that's really where they are now. I think at some point, and probably this week, they're going to have to sit him down and try to get him healthy. But I'm going to tell you that those injuries, plantar fasciitis and torn plantar fascias, are very, very long in recoveries.
Okay, so the way the AFC has played out, Clark, you could afford to sit him for 3, 4, 5, 6 weeks. But yep. You don't know if plantar fasciitis is something that's going to rebound. I am wondering, if it's John Elway and he's by himself and he looks in the mirror and just says, okay, I know what it was like at the end of my career.
Right.
And this guy can't play whether he has plantar fasciitis or right. not, or yeah, it's 100% related to the foot injury, or is it 80% injury and 20%? It's just over for Peyton.
No, I think it's over. I mean, I've thought that for a year. I mean, honestly, down the stretch last year, I think I was talking to you then and just saying Peyton Manning's not going to get any better. He's just simply going to get older. Old quarterbacks that start to fall apart. You've seen it again and again. Marino, Kelly, you've just seen it. And Manning held together for a remarkably long period of time. And then the second half last season, all of a sudden, he fell off the cliff. And then the playoffs, he was as bad as I've seen him. And people say, well, he's hurt. Well, that's what happens to 38-year-old quarterbacks, which he was then. Now he's 39. You're going to get injuries. But as I said, I think it's all related. You know, at his best this year, he still wasn't nearly what he was 2 years ago. Jeez, in that first game, Brad, that first game against Baltimore 2 years ago, he had 7 touchdown passes. You know, and you look at this year, I think he's got 7 or 9 or something like total. I mean, Drew Brees has as many passes and 1 touchdown passes one game as he had in the entire season a couple weeks ago. So it's just, I think they're in deep, deep trouble. They can't run. The quarterback's old. He can't get the ball down the field. Now you're relying on your defense to score for you. That carried you for a while. Now you look what's going on. Defense can't stop people because they're on the field all the time, and they're losing their poise. They got a guy suspended last week. This guy should be suspended too. T.J. Ward, he punched a guy yesterday.
Yep, no, there's no question about it. TalkOfFameNetwork.com. You need to check out the content there. Clark Judge joins us, one of the hosts of Talk of Fame Network. Okay, Green Bay stinks right now. There's no other way to put it. Detroit is just terrible. I mean, just awful. And here's Green Bay losing at home. But the bigger issue there is the Packers' offense. I don't want to hear that it's because Jordy Nelson's not there. Aaron Rodgers is taking a lot of hits. Can they pull themselves out of this?
They can. Yeah, they can, because they've got an exceptional quarterback. Their offensive line's pretty good. They have at times played good defense, but the defense to me is related to the offensive shortcomings, and they've got shortcomings right now. They can't get separation with those wideouts, and the run game has come to a halt. You know, now they've benched Lacy, and they're going in another direction. Starts. Well, we've seen that before. Can they get out of it? Yeah. Can they win that division? Yeah, they can. But the problem is Minnesota's playing well. Minnesota's hot. They're not. Minnesota plays very good defense. Packers not so much right now. And Minnesota can run the ball, and Green Bay can't. Minnesota's a huge threat. The Packers have a week off to get themselves together. We've been through this before with Green Bay when we tried to rule them out and say, no, they're done. And honestly, I remember 2010 when they got in the last day of the season as a wild card. Was it that game? They won the Super Bowl that year. They're not going to win the Super Bowl this year unless those receivers start getting some separation. I mean, his big targets right now are his tight ends. Whiteout's got to do a better job.
Okay, Dallas. We're going to see a coaching change there at the end of the season, or is it just because Tony Romo's not there and your co-host Rick Gosling tied in on that organization in a big way? What happens in Dallas?
No, I don't think you're going to see a change. I think they will say, yeah, it was Tony Romo. Look, we were 2-0 with him. We're 0-7 without him. He makes a huge difference in our team, and not just on the field. I think off the field, too, with some leadership. I mean, listen, there's no leadership there now from anyone there. You got Greg Hardy doing his thing, and you got Dez Bryant doing his thing. Someone needs to stand up there and say, listen, we need to win some ball games here, and listen to me, I'll take you there. That's the quarterback, and I think now that he's back, some measure of stability will return to that team. But even in the NFC East, which is awful, I don't think it's enough, because the Giants actually showed yesterday, yeah, they might be a team to be reckoned with. They may be a team that you have to fear in the playoffs if you draw them. But otherwise, it's I think, a situation where, as I said, Jerry Jones, who gave Garrett the extension after last year, says, no, it's because of Romo. We're not going anywhere. They don't want to make the change.
Clark Judge joining us, TalkOfFameNetwork.com. The Talk of Fame Network will be at the Luxor December 5th. Jerry Rice will be there with Clark and also Rick Gosling. What a great opportunity. That's going to be at the Luxor. You can go to TalkOfFameNetwork.com. We'll put a link up on our site as well about that. My goal this year in the NFL is to have Commissioner Goodell standing in the locker room with a trophy to hand to Tom Brady. I really, really, really want to see that like nothing else, because I know that he would want to just puke on his shoes rather than do that. That said, they lose Julian Edelman. Clark, they lose Dion Lewis. They've lost people all over the place. The war of attrition, is it starting to show up with Green Bay?
With New England?
I mean,
yeah,
New England. With New England.
Yeah, it is. It is. But the Dion Lewis injury, they can overcome. They've overcome injuries like that in the past. The Edelman one is a big one. This would be like losing Wes Welker 6 years ago to them, 7 years ago. I mean, he is his security blanket. To me, he is as important to Brady as Gronkowski. and you could see it after he exited yesterday, wasn't the same. Brady was missing some easy passes. He was missing targets. He's going now to Brandon LaFell. Brandon LaFell, I mean, he dropped six balls in the first game he was back. So he's looking for a reliable receiver. He's got one in the tight end, but they're double covering him. So who's going to beat you? And you find out, is it going to be, you know, is it going to be LaFell? No. Is it going to be Danny Amendola? Well, it was on fourth down yesterday. He's a Edelman type of player, but he doesn't have the history or the relationship with Brady that Edelman does. Brady trusts Edelman. He trusts Gronk. And he doesn't trust guys like, you know, LaFell and Amendola. And I think that'll show up. Are they going to lose? Yeah, they're going to lose anyway at some point. They should have lost yesterday. But they're going to lose at some point. The problem you've got with New England, as far as other teams are concerned, is the one guy that makes that thing spin never goes down. That's Brady. Yeah. I mean, as long as you got Tom Brady, you got a shot. I don't care if you put a bunch of doorknobs around him. You got a shot, and they've done that before. And he always wins. You look at that last drive yesterday. Should that have been an interception? Yeah, it should have been. Game should have been over. But it wasn't, and he kept them going and kept them going, and he got them in position so they kept the game-winning field goal. But, yeah, the war of attrition is having its impact on them. Edelman loss is significant. Nevertheless, they're the best team out there.
Carson Palmer has no doorknobs around him.
He does not.
So I thought last night was a contender victory because even Bruce Arians has said you guys are playing like pretenders. What do you see going on with Carson Palmer?
I see a potential MVP candidate, a guy who's confident, who's got receivers galore, as you mentioned, but is playing as well as he has to me at any point in his career. And I'm not talking about statistically. I like what he's doing. Like yesterday, after they go – you know, blowing a 19-point lead, and they fall behind. And it's his mistakes. He just picks them back up and going down the field. And I love the Ellington pass at the end of the game. I mean, that was terrific. I mean, what they're doing, Brad, is they went into a place you're not supposed to win.
Yeah.
They beat a team that's defending division champions. They beat a team that's always a Super Bowl threat. But you know what? They took it to him, and they took it to him in the fourth quarter when Seattle's supposed to be at its best, but it has not been this year, and honestly, it's been at its worst. But going in there, winning a game when Seattle had its back to the wall and said, we got to win this. It's a must-win for us. The Arizona Cardinals are legit. I mean, I look at the Cardinals, and I look at Carolina and go, whoa, 1-1A. I'm not sure which is better. Certainly the record says Carolina, but they're similar in a lot of respects. But I look at Arizona now and trust them so much. You got a big game in your town next week. Cincinnati? That's going to be Cincinnati's first loss.
Ooh, listen to you. Now, okay, so let's go over here on the Ellington play. I'm sure you've seen the Drew Stanton video, right?
Yeah, right.
So, Clark, you and I have been around the NFL for a long, long time, and we have the clip here. And the video, when you see Drew Stanton celebrating and egging his player on, encouraging his player, we don't see that anymore. And fans today, that's been a bigger deal than the Cardinals' win.
Right. Well, not in the East, it's not. But I understand it, and that's what I love about that team, as you know, because you're around there all the time. Being around Bruce Arians is a lot of fun. You don't say that about most coaches. You say it about a guy like Rex Ryan, but you know, Belichick, not so much. But you get a guy like Bruce Arians, and it's fun, and you know, it's one thing to have fun and be good at your job and that sort of thing. But to win games like he's winning, I mean, Rex is considered sort of a clown in a way, and
yes,
you know, he can win some, but he's more of a clown than anything else. Bruce Arians knows what he's talking about. He's a lot of fun to be around, and I think that is passed on to his players.
Yep.
I think they're having a good time playing there, and they want to play for the guy. And when you want to play for him, you get something out of these players that others don't. You look at what he's done there. It's remarkable. It's remarkable what he's done in turning that whole thing around. I love Bruce Arians. I love watching that team. I want to see them succeed. And to me, last night was a major, major step forward. You're going to win that division. You're going to be a team that's going to go deep in the playoffs. Could you be in the Super Bowl? Absolutely. I have no doubt in my mind you could. I know what Carson Palmer's record is in playoffs and that sort of thing. I don't care. I like what's going on in Arizona right now.
See you soon. Thanks.
Thanks.
Clark Judge with us. Talk of Fame Network, talkoffame.com. They're going to be in Vegas again on December 5th at the Luxor with Jerry Rice. Back with more, including Paula Bovin. So we have ASU meeting U of A this coming Saturday. And I could sit here and give you the history and the rivalry and the territorial cup. And no, it's two teams that stink this year. But there's still something to the game, and that's next. So then let me switch over to ASU because I was one of the five people that was watching on the Pac-12 network on Saturday afternoon, and they were so bad in the first half. I mean, you have a senior center snapping to a senior quarterback who wasn't ready for the snap from the senior center. That bad, like the worst I've seen ASU this year. And then the second half, they played like they're supposed to all season long. Like, I don't know what to make out of this team.
Yeah, you know, Brad, I had half my column written at halftime, and the lead was something the effect of the worst effort ever in the Todd Graham era. I had never seen ASU perform like that. It was awful. And I was just, you know, I think the week or two before I used the word manure in my lead, I was about to use something worse, I think. So, and then, but then the way they came back and their ability to not only win that game, but to play well doing it. Yeah, I mean, I think that game sort of exemplified the problems with this team, their crazy inconsistency. But, you know, more power to them that they were able to find a way to win. They needed that in a big way.
Okay, so let's move advance ahead then to this Saturday's game. Who is under more pressure to win this rivalry game this week? To me, it's Todd Graham and ASU because he lost to them last year. What do you think about U of A, ASU, and the coach that's under more pressure to win?
I completely agree with you, and I think a lot of it has to do with, you know, the expectations before the season. I mean, I think Arizona had them, but not to the degree that ASU did. I think if they lose this game, you know, people are already hugely disappointed with the season. If they lose this game, though, it'll take that to a whole new level. They win it, and they can beat Cal, which is possible. You know, then they finish 7-5 and they go to a bowl. And while that's not what people hope for, it sure doesn't seem half as bad. So I think the expectations are certainly on Graham just because of the pressures on Graham, excuse me, because the expectations before the season.
Who's the better team, though, right now on the field?
Oh, jeez. I have no clue.
I think ASU is just because of numbers of players that are still on the field for them. And they've had their injuries. I'm not going to try to sell that short. But U of A has just been decimated this whole season.
I know, and they had another injury this weekend. I mean, it just seems like it's every week with UA. I would have easily said ASU when you asked that question, but after what I saw in that first half, it really made me wonder about this team. But, yeah, I mean, I think if you're looking on paper and you look at the amount of experience and seniors and talent that ASU has, I mean, the more I look at Balazs, the more I see him running in the NFL in a few years. That guy is really good. So there's some talent on that field.
They played Manny Wilkins a little bit. I saw on Twitter you were asking people whether or not you'd want them to use Wilkins more. I like the fact that he's out on the field. I would have liked to have seen, I don't know, 10, 15 more plays. His redshirt year is burned up, so just play him. Right. Do you want to see more of him against U of A?
Well, you know, obviously the way Berkovici played in the second half, I don't know if we're going to see more of Wilkins because that's exactly what ASU needs to beat UA and to beat Cal. So I think only in certain situations, and, you know, that was sort of the case. I mean, they have certain plays designed for him, and I know that last week they had limited media access to the team, ASU did, which was rare. And a lot of thought is maybe because they were working some of that Wilkins stuff in. So I think I would love to see him in more situations like that. Absolutely. I think he has a lot to offer, sort of that, you know, mobility that he can add another element to the offense, things like that. But I don't think they're, you know, as fans have sort of cried for him, I don't think they're going to see him that much.
Paula Bovin, AZ Central Sports columnist. She joins us for a couple of minutes via Skype every Monday, Sports 360. AZ.com. Your co-worker Doug Haller had some comments from Ray Anderson towards the end of last week where Ray was talking about the season and said that the recruiting efforts that are going on here in state are a reason of optimism. Yeah, I guess on November 14th, but I go back to Joshua Dobbs, who's now the quarterback at Tennessee, and how Todd had him all sewed up, and on letter of intent day, the kid pulled out. Kalen Balazs, ASU was very lucky that there was a snowstorm, or they probably would have lost him from the way that it sounded last year. I guess I'm just kind of befuddled because the game is not even close to being sold out this week against U of A. It's your arch rival. And if either one of the kids from Chandler High School decides to decommit, which can always be a possibility, then what are we left with? So I don't know, Paula. I guess I'm not the one voice saying that this is not a great season in recruiting for them, but if that's the best you got is landing some local recruits, then this stinks worse than ever to me.
Well, yeah, and I think you have to look at last season, too. I thought they did a nice job recruiting last season. And this season is about sort of the local recruits and try to make an impact. Listen, I don't measure these five-star guys enough to know how well they're doing or they're not. I do know that a big issue with ASU has been bringing the local guys in. And I think this is definitely a start in, you know, moving in the right direction for this program. Does it mean everything's fine at ASU? Of course not. But as I think I pointed out in my column Saturday, when I was looking back at sort of where some of the other different coaches have started, I mean, this is, I think, the best start since maybe John Cooper, you know, the 8 victories and 10 victories and 10 victories. This season is certainly a letdown. But people are just ready to blow everything up here, you know, fans that are so frustrated. And I think if you look at the body of work, look what they've done in these 3.5 seasons, look at where the recruiting is heading. I think it's pretty positive, Mr. Negative Nelly there.
That's me. That's me. I've been called a lot worse. Gary Pinkel leaves at Missouri. So that's a very, in my opinion, that's a very good job that hasn't been open in a long, long, long time. And we see where Miami of Florida is open, Virginia Tech is open, USC is open. I think there's 13 Division I jobs that are open right now, and we know that there's going to be more. Rich Rod's situation, to me, he's gone. This will be the last time that we see Rich Rod, in my humble opinion. Are you feeling the same way coming into this week's game?
Yeah, certainly more than I felt in a while about a coach leaving, just because, I mean, you know, despite the up and down season they've had in Tucson, there is still a lot of respect for Rich Rodriguez among coaches around the country. So if you're going to leave, even when you're struggling a little bit, now is the time to leave. You know, the opportunity to possibly go back home, those kinds of things, to work with an AD that you have respect for. And certainly he has a great relationship with Greg Byrne, and that wasn't what I was insinuating. I think he's very lucky to have Byrne as his AD. But the bottom line is, I think it's a hard place to win. I mean, you know, it's a basketball school. You're recruiting against great California schools, mm-hmm. Texas schools, ASU to a certain extent. I think it's a tough job, and so I wouldn't be surprised to see him go, despite sort of that lucrative offer he has if he sticks around.
Yeah, and I didn't mention Maryland in there as well. He's just, to me, he's done what he's needed to do in Tucson. And I would say the same for Greg, but that's not what this conversation's about. I think this will be the last we see Rich Rod, and that they are still a basketball school. Whether they want to hear that or not, admit to it or not, I've talked to enough assistant coaches around the Pac-12 that they've been hurt by recruiting the last 2 weeks, that they're getting their best recruits of this class. They've already had one decommitment, asking them point blank, well, are you going to be there? So right. This will be very interesting on Saturday between the two. And then for ASU, if they lose this game, then they have got to go to Cal to become bowl eligible. And
right.
And is there going to be enough bowl-eligible teams this year? That's becoming now a big issue behind the scenes, from my understanding, with the bowls is we don't have enough 6-win teams. So
I know. Well, and, you know, that has shown – and I understand why the bowl system is there, but as we've talked about for many years, there's just too many of them, and these kind of situations arise. And I don't disagree – I don't agree, excuse me – with my colleague Jeff Metcalf, I know, who said if you have a certain amount record and it's not 500 or whatever, you don't go to a bowl game if you get an invitation. I think you use those extra practices. So I understand why teams will do it even if they don't have winning records. If in fact that is the case with bowl teams this year, as you said, there may not be enough teams following the regular rules of bowl eligibility, which means you can't have a losing record. So I've never been a huge fan of as many bowl games as they have, and I wouldn't mind to see that system change a little bit, but I don't think it will.
Before I let you go, there's a couple scenarios that I've seen for ASU and U of A for bowl games. I've seen U of A linked to playing BYU in the Aloha Bowl. I could see that happening. These are by guys that don't just sit around and throw darts. These are by guys that actually work on this stuff. U of A in the Cactus Bowl against Air Force on January 2nd. That wouldn't be bad. I've seen ASU linked to the Heart of Dallas Bowl. I didn't know there was such a thing against Miami. This is the one that is intriguing to me, and I told Eric about this. ASU having to travel to Tucson to play Nevada in the Nova Home Loans Arizona Bowl. Hey, ASU fans, you have to follow us to a bowl game, so you have to go to Tucson. How great is that going to play out? or ASU against Mississippi State in the Liberty Bowl on January 2nd. Paula would get an all-expense-paid New Year's night in Memphis, which isn't the worst place to be stuck at.
No, actually, that's not bad at all. I wouldn't mind it.
Yeah. So.
You know, it's funny because you mentioned the Tucson. I mean, I'm already seeing the great Juan Roque, who's, you know, terrific guy and posts stuff on social media all the time. I mean, he's, you know, talks every time he mentions the word Tucson, he practically says he has to regurgitate. You know, I mean, it's that bad. And I know people don't like to go down there. So I'm interested to see where it happens. I mean, I think anywhere they go, there's going to be a bit of a lackluster following just because this is a season that has been not the season people thought about. So.
All right. I'll let you get out of here then. Thanks.
All right, Brad.
It's Paula Bova, News and Notes, AZ Central sports columnist. Of course, we partner with the Arizona Republic. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic AZ Central Sports, our television show every Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday nights at 6, 10, 1 a.m. and 7 a.m. replays on Fox Sports Arizona, pro, college, high school, Brad Sussmatz, Football AZ. We're back with more after this timeout. Up in next segment, we'll talk more about the bowl games. Stay with us. So there was a time when the Suns would play the Lakers that it was a really big deal. And they have the Lakers tonight, and there's no Kobe Bryant. He's not playing. I hope that, and I don't have the date in front of me, I hope that when he does have his last game at Phoenix, that it is sold out. Because Kobe Bryant for years has played the role of villain. And you know this, if you haven't seen me before, my belief is every sport needs villains. And when Kobe walks in, fans can boo him all they want. Fans also can wear the Kobe Bryant jerseys. There's been more home games of Suns, especially over the last several years, where Kobe in a there's been a lot of Kobe lovers and a lot of Kobe haters. When the Suns played Kobe in his prime in the playoffs, the arena had a buzz about it. So for Kobe not to play tonight, he played last night against Detroit, and he played heavy minutes. He actually said after the game, they've been trying to limit him to his minutes. In his minutes played, and they went right through the number of minutes, and he almost had a triple-double last night. So he was having a hard time just walking to the car. That's what it's turning into for Kobe Bryant. Like, Eric, did you even know that the Lakers were in town tonight?
I did. I did know that the Lakers are in town tonight.
Yeah. Are you like me that you want the – if Kobe – I think each team rolls in twice a year. I think that's how the schedule still lays out.
And I don't have West and East are just – So yeah, the East Coast teams come twice?
No, East Coast comes in once.
Okay, and the West come in twice. That makes sense.
Eastern Conference comes
Eastern
in once.
Eastern Conference.
Yeah.
There are some West Coast teams that are playing in the East, but that's an argument and a discussion for a whole other day.
So. But the West, the Western Conference, I believe it's each team rolls in twice. And so tonight Kobe is not going to play. In fact, Kobe's not even going to be in the building. He didn't even travel with the Lakers. I have no problem with that. At this stage of his career, and they're trying to rest him up, the last thing he needs to do is sit on a plane to play for one night here. But there should be something, shouldn't there? Like, you know, when great players, I'm trying to think, who was it that the Suns put like a rocking chair out for? Who was that? It was a few years.
Yeah, who was that?
Do you remember that?
I do.
It was a goodbye, you're retiring, and we hope everything goes well for you. And they had like the big presentation and the big goodbye stuff.
It'd be nice if the Suns did that. I mean, there is no greater Suns villain than Kobe Bryant.
And
I mean, Robert Horry is right up there. But.
Yeah, but Robert Horry was a fool.
Correct.
Robert Horry was a fool to Danny.
He never disrespected the Phoenix, but he definitely disrespected the Suns. I'm talking about Kobe.
Oh, Kobe.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know, the whole the Rajah Bell feud and.
No, that was great drama.
It was.
No, it'd be fun to have Raja like in a suit. Raja's with the Warriors now,
I believe.
That's
right.
Yeah. The Warriors have all these good guys. I mean, they just have
good coaches, good front
coaches,
office, great players.
Guys they could roll out.
Good fans.
Kind of like the Suns used to be, you know? Suns would have the
fun
Suns
brand,
alumni. And
likeable team.
Yeah.
Good faces.
Yep. Roll them out there.
Where are we going with this?
Treat people the right way. Where do you think I'm going with this? It's not the way now. So I actually talked to somebody the other night at the Denver game, and they said that it was a good crowd for the Suns. So they have – this is actually an interesting week for them. So they have the Lakers tonight, and they have the Bulls here on Wednesday, and it's the only game of the year with the Bulls. It's supposed to be an 8:30 start. It'll start like at 9:10 or something and go until midnight.
The Clipper game that was supposed to start at 8:30 tipped off at. I was watching it because I like I always like to see what time it actually tips off. At 8:47 was when it tipped
just
off.
Silly. Just silly. Now, it's not that we sit here and we're a bunch of old guys looking at our watches, but like last night's Cardinals game, over 4 hours. And don't even get me going because I'll just run right through the segment about the officiating and just how bad it was last night, because every game was just dreadful. Every game I watched yesterday, it was like, these guys have no idea. The other thing is on the bowl game. So you heard me there with Paula. ASU in Tucson against Nevada would draw what? 15,000?
No, more than that.
You think?
Sure.
You think fans would really be in the...
Sure. Because it's so close, they could get 20 to 25,000 fans there.
50?
No.
ASU Mississippi State at the Liberty Bowl?
That's now, I love Memphis. Much better opponent, better bowl,
yeah,
better venue.
Yeah, yeah. The Fiesta, and the Fiesta is so far off the radar, but they're talking about Oklahoma State, Notre Dame, or Baylor against Houston. Oh, it's fine.
It's fine.
It's fine. And TCU, the Alamo Bowl against either Utah or USC.
That'd be good. That's a good
bowl.
You're
going, right?
That one I actually probably would go to.
Yeah. Another day off or week off. Eric's contract.
Long weekend. My long weekends consist of 5 days.
Sports360AZ.com, AZ Central Sports. I'm Brad Sussmat.